Welcome everyone to the Partners in Lag podcast, episode 2 for Saturday, January 30th, 2010. My name is Newman, and with me is Az.
This is Az from Camarillo, California.
And I'm from Melbourne, Australia, and we're here to bring you some more Trans-Pacific gaming craziness.
Yes.
Today we're talking about mobile games, so mobile platforms. I mean, we just heard all about one new mobile platform, and I'm sure we'll get to that, but also what's happened with the DS, what's happening with the PSP, are people still playing them, do people even care anymore, and what'll be happening with mobile platforms in the future. So to start with, what's news? Any news from you?
Well, we got a lot of news, we didn't have a podcast last week, so we got a couple weeks worth of news. How about the top selling games of 2009? Have you read up on that one?
Pretty much all Wii games except for Modern Warfare 2.
Yeah, it's a really pathetic list, actually. It's a really depressing list. I suppose it isn't surprising, but the top-selling games, it's amazing to consider that most of them are Wii games. It's just really amazing to me.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I mean, games that didn't even come out in the last year, it's been, games like Mario Kart Wii that have been selling like hotcakes since, whenever they launched. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it's amazing that they're selling so well, and they're cracking the top 10 of the entire year, not just for a little while. It's absolutely insane, and it really is kind of depressing, but obviously it's not stopping hardcore games from being made, so I don't think we should be worried.
Exactly. I mean, I used to have a Wii only, and I moved on long time ago now.
Yeah, I had a buddy who decided to go that route, and I think he got depressed pretty quickly after he realized that nothing was really hitting the Wii that he was interested in.
I mean, for hardcore gamers, it's, I wouldn't say a dead platform, but I mean, one or two titles a year, maybe, from, I mean, I only pick up the Nintendo first party titles.
Yeah.
And they're usually the only ones really worth buying. I mean, occasionally there'll be an interesting third party title like No More Heroes or Mad World, but even then, they're nothing sort of, they're not sort of the big AAA titles that everyone's clamoring to get. They're oddities, they're interesting, but why play a good game on the Wii when you can play a great game on the 360 or the PS3?
Exactly. Sometimes there are unique elements to the Wii games that make them worth playing, as far as multi-platform games go, but for the most part, it's just really, if you have a better system, play it on a better system, essentially.
Yeah, definitely.
Let me just run it down real quick, in case no one's read up on it. And number one, we have Call of Duty Modern Warfare for the 360. Number two spot, we have Wii Sports Resort. Number three, we have New Super Mario Brothers. And number four, we have Wii Fit. Number five, we have Wii Fit Plus, which is, I can't believe they have the back-to-back spots. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
Number six, we got Mario Kart Wii. Number seven, we have Wii Play. Number eight is Modern Warfare 2 for the PS3, which is, it's kind of interesting to see that it's so low in comparison to the 360.
Yeah.
Number nine, we have ODST, Halo 3 ODST.
Oh, wow.
I'm actually surprised to see it in the top 10 at all.
I guess it is a Halo game, but yeah, it's not exactly Halo 4. It's sort of a side thing, but people, I don't know. I mean, the reviews were even a bit mixed. Is there enough game there for $60? Because it was sort of a side project thing that got turned into a full price game.
Mm.
But
it's kind of surprising to see that up there. I didn't, as far as I know, it didn't sell that well, but I guess I could be mistaken.
I guess it did. I mean, I know there wasn't a huge huge interest in it within the Gamers with Jobs community, for instance. So,
well, I think that was, I think the GWJ crowd mirrored pretty much everyone else. It there was interest within Halo players, but I think after 3, everyone really started to taper off, especially with, you know, new big franchises taking its place, like Gears of War, BioShock, etc. I think a lot of interest in the Haloverse just kind of really wound down after Halo 3. And I think especially for a lot of even hardcore Halo 2 players, Halo 3, just as far as multiplayer and whatnot, it just really wasn't what a lot of people were looking for. And there wasn't much change, and it just kind of felt like it started to wear out its welcome.
Yeah. And I mean, the funny thing with ODST as well is that for long-time Halo 3 players, there was really nothing in this, or at least not as much value as someone who was new to the franchise. You got a sort of 5-hour single-player game and a whole bunch of multiplayer content that you'd already shelled out $60 and then $20-$30 for DLC 4 anyway.
Right.
So it's, I guess it's just one of those things that, you know, like Madden, there are a lot of people out there that aren't that hardcore gamer set that are reading the news and following the reviews and stuff that just buy this stuff. And I mean, I guess the Wii numbers bear that out as well.
Yeah. With the 7 out of 10 of the games on there are Wii games.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And then rounding it out, last place, we have Pokemon Platinum for the DS, which that's actually a surprise to me, at least.
That's amazing. The Pokemon franchise just keeps going.
It keeps going. And it cracked the top 10, I mean. I can't recall what the last versions did, but I bet they were up there as well.
Yeah, they were selling millions in the first week.
Yeah.
Just as sort of all of them seem to have. And it's the same game over and over again. I don't know why people keep buying them, but I can't exactly talk too much on that because I did buy the last ones for the DS. Well, the first ones for the DS.
Yep. They are. Right. They really haven't changed much. That Japanese RPG, that's kind of I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. That just style, it really sticks in Japan. You know, the change is not their forte.
Yep.
It's just they like to keep seeing things the same, and it shows.
I like me some Pokemon too, so I'm probably not the best person to talk about that.
Yeah, you know, when the previous DS versions came out, I picked one of them up. I think I picked up Diamond, and you know, I tried to really get back into it because I was a big Pokemon kid, but I just I played it for I think maybe 10 hours, which is, for me at least, you know, if I'm going to play a game and then not like it, for me to get 10 hours in, I guess that says something.
That's a fair effort. I mean, most single player games would be about 10 hours these days, so
yeah. But, you know, I think part of it had to do with that there's really nothing at the time that I wanted to play on my DS aside from Advance Wars. So that could have been something to do with it. But still, you know, it has its appeal, and I definitely have some nostalgia invested in the Pokemon franchise. But it didn't stick for me. It's like you said, it's the same game.
Yeah. I'm certainly going to be lining up for the new iterations that are out in, a couple of months' time now.
Yeah. Let's see, the PS3 wand got delayed until later this year.
And it's not called the PlayStation Dildo, apparently.
It's apparently, unfortunately not. The latest rumor is that it's called the PS3, the ARC controller, is the latest rumor. Apparently, there's some good evidence suggesting that's what it'll be called, but at this point we don't know. Either way, I don't think Sony really knows how to name anything, so it'll probably be something as generic or dumb or whatever as ARC. I mean, the DualShock is, you know, it's kind of a very good description for what the controller is. The 6-axis, again, it's just a good description, but it's kind of a lame name. So yeah. I'm not expecting them to really blow me out of the water with the name of that.
Oh, well, if Nintendo has taught us nothing, it's that it doesn't matter how bad or terrible your name is. The system will sell if people want it.
Yeah, exactly. There's some big releases, at least for me. Chinatown Wars hit the iPhone. I've been playing the hell out of that.
Awesome. How's that been?
Have you played it at all on the DS or PSP?
No, I totally skipped it. But I take it it's a bit of a hark back to the days of GTA 1 and 2, that sort of top-down view.
Yeah, and, you know, I started playing GTA back when, you know, the demo for the original game came out, before the original was even released, when I was an impressionable youth.
playing games you probably shouldn't have been playing.
Exactly. I also played Postal around the same time, if that gives you any idea. But yeah, I remember skipping a lot of first period classes to get some extended GTA time in. I was a really big fan of the original 2, and I thought 2 was a really amazing game, if nothing else, because they did a really excellent job on the atmosphere of it. And Chinatown Wars is definitely in that old school style. It's a very good game. It's a very solid game. It's essentially what GTA 3 would have been if they stuck with the old bird's eye view. You know, they have lots of good modern stuff in there. They have the mini map, and you can set waypoints, and it's a lot easier to navigate the city. Checkpoints are a lot better. There's a lot more mini games and things to do that are pretty entertaining. Trading drugs is surprisingly fun. Don't do it in real life, kids, but do it in Grand Theft Auto, because you can make a lot of money like that. There's a lot of really, really smart design decisions, and Rockstar Leeds did an amazing job with it. You know, they stuck with a good base, and they ripped out what they could from the modern games, and they shoved it in there as best as they could, and they did an amazing job with it. It's a really solid game, and on iPhone and iPod, it's only $10, so it's an absolute steal.
Yep, that's a bargain. How are the controls? Yeah. How did they work out?
It has kind of the iPhone standard of kind of on-screen buttons. A lot of people don't seem to like them. I really don't have a particular problem with them. At some points, you know, you can kind of lose control to a point where you think the control is in one place, but you're pressing it somewhere else.
Yep.
Sometimes that can happen. It's kind of rare, at least for me. And when it does happen, it's a slight annoyance, but for what it is, I think it does a really good job. Perhaps it'll be better on the iPad. Who knows?
So it plays as well as any game with touchscreen controls, or touchscreen sort of D-pad style controls.
Yeah, you know, and if you're not a fan of those and you've absolutely written them off, I don't think this is going to, you know, make you particularly convinced. It's not like it doesn't have anything particularly mind-blowing with it. I don't think there's any kind of tactile feedback as far as vibration goes. I wouldn't know. I'm playing it on a second-generation iPod Touch. Maybe there's something on the iPhone. I don't think so. I haven't heard anything. But it controls pretty well, and they do a good job with it, and they keep your thumbs out of the way, more or less. And, you know, all the rest of the touchscreen-based stuff, they ripped out of the DS, and it works really well. So I've been very happy with it. I'm a believer. Rockstar Leeds can produce some really good stuff, and hopefully they're not being overworked to death like Rockstar San Diego, but... I'm a big fan, and I really love it.
$10, it sounds like a no-brainer if you're into the franchise.
Absolutely. But, you know, it has the controls going against it for the crowd that can't stand that. And there's also the crowd that just doesn't like the old-school GTA style.
Yep.
And while the cameras and everything, it's a lot better compared to the old games. You know, a lot of people have just written it off because of that, and I don't know if this will convince them either. But, you know, buy it, basically.
It's $10, people. It's, yeah, three coffees. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's one of the more expensive iPod games, but it's no dollar game here, but it's definitely worth $10.
Well, I've been playing Mass Effect 2.
Yeah.
And that has been really good so far, apart from the fact that it has, well, it's crashed on me once, and I got a bugged mission as well, so I had to replay about Well, actually, it crashed right after the introduction before it saves for the first time. So I had to play the introduction twice.
Well, and then yeah.
So that was about 20 minutes of gameplay replayed. And then I had a bug mission, which is probably about another 20 minutes that I had to replay. Apart from those bugs, it has been fantastic. And to be honest, playing the intro twice didn't bother me too much because it is phenomenal. The first half an hour of that game is just really, really, really good. I won't go into any more detail than that, but yeah, that's, you're in for a treat.
I've seen a couple of reviews and they give more away than you do, but it definitely looks like it's a really solid game. It's unfortunate to hear about the problems you've had, but that's kind of I suppose that's par for the course because I remember having those problems in the original Mass Effect as well.
I didn't have any trouble with the first one, and it sounds like a lot of people haven't had any trouble with this one. But it's just I've unfortunately been hit by two random glitches, but. Yep. Hopefully that'll be the end of it. And but yeah, apart from that, story is great, acting's great, the graphics have really been kicked up a notch. Just the production values that BioWare bring to the table. It's really, really, really nice game to look at and to watch.
It looks like they've really. I didn't think they stepped it up as much as they did, but seeing the screens and videos from. The release build, it looks like they really did an amazing job on it, and I'm really looking forward to playing it as soon as possible.
As soon as you get that 360,
it's coming.
Excellent.
I got my W-2s. I'm gonna file my taxes pretty soon, so I should get a decent enough return to pick up at least a 360 in a couple games.
Sweet.
Yes. Look forward to it. Just a couple little quickies. Squaresoft, or Square Enix, I suppose now, will be releasing Final Fantasy 1 and 2 for the iPhone platform coming at some point, which is pretty interesting. It's good to see a big publisher doing big games on the iPhone. It's obviously gaining a lot more ground nowadays.
Yeah, it's being taken much more seriously as a platform.
Definitely. Supposed to be some info about Rockstar's L.A. Noir dropping sometime in February, and that looks like a game to keep an eye on. If Red Dead Redemption is any kind of clue as to the quality of games you're looking to pump out, L.A. Noir should be something to watch, most definitely. Darwinia Plus is coming in February as well. February 10th for XBLA. Regardless of whether or not you like the game, buy it, because introversion needs money. they've openly stated that they have a quota to reach in order to maintain profitability. So I know I'll definitely be picking it up once I get a 360. Darwinia was kind of a sleeper hit even for me. I picked it up because I really dug the style, and I kind of sat on it for about 6 months and didn't really play it. But one day I picked it up and I really just kind of plowed straight through it, and it's an amazing game, really.
Yeah, I have a soft spot for those guys because they're big supporters of Linux. All of their games have, well, apart from this obviously being XBLA, have come out on Linux, and I think it's great to support people like that.
Most definitely. There's a Dead Rising movie coming. It's being directed by Keiji Inafune, the director of the game, as well as, obviously Mega Man and everything else golden at Capcom. It looks like a... There's a trailer online. We'll throw up a link in the in our post. And it looks like a cheesy little... Japanese horror kind of short flick. I believe it's being released for free, so at the very least, I'm sure it'll be worth checking out for fans of the series. It looks pretty retarded, though.
Oh, that's cool. At least it's not a cynical money grab if it's being thrown out there on the web for free.
Yeah, as far as I know, it's going to be thrown out for free, and I believe it also might be thrown out on Xbox Live. Who knows if that'll remain free, how much Microsoft loves their money.
They sure do.
Yeah, those bastards. But hopefully it will be. It looks interesting, so check that out. Halo Reach screenshots have been released, and it looks like a Halo game.
Big surprise there.
Yeah. It looks, you know, Halo Reach is supposed to be kind of the origin of the whole Halo story. So it looks like they could do some interesting stuff with it. You know, kind of going back to basics, essentially.
Yep, yep.
It looks like Bungie actually did kind of step up the graphics engine a little bit. They say they maxed it out, but, you know, there are much better looking games on the 360. I'm sorry, Bungie.
Yeah, yeah. I know people said the same thing when Halo 3 came out as well. But they've had a long time to work on that engine now. I mean, the ODST guys just used that engine pretty much as it was from Halo 3, I understand it. So
yeah,
they've had, yeah, what, 3 years now to work on that engine, or nearly 3 years to improve it. So hopefully we'll see some results from that.
I'm hoping for it. I think that about does it for news this week. There's some more crap we could go over, but fuck it.
If you're watching the news, you've probably heard it anyway.
Yeah, and as I said, we didn't do a podcast last week, so some of the stuff we're spouting out is a bit behind by now. So I guess that'll do it for news.
Fantastic. All right. Well, let's get on to our main topic, which is mobile gaming. Looking at various aspects of mobile gaming these days, different platforms, where we think mobile gaming will go. If people still care about the legacy platforms from Nintendo and Sony. I know you're a... Can we call them legacy platforms? Or is that
that's a harsh word. Legacy platforms. As far as I know, the DS is still selling like hotcakes, so...
Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
Well, has the DS become the Wii? I mean, so the hardcore audience has all but abandoned the Wii. Do you think it's happening? Is that the same thing that's happening with the DS now?
To a point. You know, there was a real DS fervor there for a little while. When was the DS released? Was it 04 or 05?
04, I'm pretty sure, the original DS. And then the PSP was March 05.
Yeah, I remember a couple years, I think it was 06 or so, there was a real, the hardcore, you know, that was the console, you know, fuck the PSP. We're all about DS. It was for a while there. You know, I remember hearing lots of anecdotes about, you know, people at conventions. You know, everyone had a DS. There was very few people with PSPs, and everyone was really digging the kind of alternative style of games that were being pumped out. And now it's, I don't want to say it's dead, but now the landscape is changing. The DS isn't the only platform with touch anymore.
Yep.
There are better platforms out there with touch, and I won't say there's platforms with better games out there necessarily, but it's kind of just become it's no longer as fresh as it was, and I think a lot of what has been coming out on the DS is it's been a lot of throwback titles. Not a lot of really unique games seem to be coming out as far as touchscreen controls go and whatnot.
Yep, yep. I mean, it's hard to compete almost with the iPhone these days in terms of that hardcore audience. I mean, a lot of people carried their DSs around as a portable gaming system when they wanted to play something on the go. But if you've already got an iPhone in your pocket and you can pick up a new experience for that on the go, on the fly, for under $5, you only need to fill in half an hour or whatever every day, or maybe even 5 minutes here or there. It makes sense to just whip that iPhone or whatever out of your pocket and check out something on that instead of carrying around another device in terms of, you know, like a DS or a PSP.
Yeah, you know, there are experiences that you just on mobile platforms, cellular platforms, whatever we want to call them, that you just can't find. There's a real lack of certain genres on the iPhone and Android and whatnot. You can't find a really good strategy RPG still, which is, it's amazing to think that that's such a hard thing to find.
Yeah, that's a bit disturbing, actually. I mean, Final Fantasy Tactics Advance was perhaps my most loved game on the GBA, and something like that would be a... You'd think it'd be a natural fit for a touchscreen platform like the iPhone.
You would think so. I think part of it is, you know, a lot of people are just now starting to really take the iPhone seriously. I think they started to take it more seriously last year once they started to see all the, you know, the insane amounts of money that seemed to be trickling into it. And yep. the stupid amounts of sales from retarded things like the iFart app. I think that guy made at least over $100,000 in sales, which
is disturbing.
No, it's disgusting. It's I don't know who's paying a dollar for listening to fart noises, but I'm pretty sure your body is capable of producing them on the fly. I don't know. I know I can fart anytime I want, if I really want to.
I don't know if I can fart anytime I want, but I certainly do it often enough that you'd think that would that would satiate any need I have to listen to fart noises.
All right. Well, at the very least, you know, you'd think... Well, I was going to say you would think people would be more mature than that, but I won't give anyone that much credit. I really
won't. Oh, no. People are not mature.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of developers are really starting to take it more seriously. You know, Final Fantasy is coming. GTA hit. We're starting to see bigger titles from actual major publishers and not just mobile only platform publishers. It should start to gain more traction over the years. And, you know, there are a lot more platforms that have similar sets of features. You know, the iPhone isn't the only touchscreen cell phone in the market anymore. There's the tons of Android handsets. There's devices from Palm, and they're all, they're not all the same, but it's kind of like how the consoles have been, where they're similar enough to where you can squeeze the same experience on there.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, between the iPhone, the Android phones, and the pre devices, or the pre and the Pixie, mm-hmm. they're all pretty similar. They're all got similar screen resolutions, a similar aspect ratios, similar process. I mean, half the underlying hardware is the same in all those platforms, or at least, you know, from the same family. So mm-hmm. it would not at all surprise me to see, and I would hope to see, now that there are more Android devices out there, and not just more, but more popular devices that people are actually aspiring to own.
Yeah.
Back in the early days, you had the G1, and no one really wanted the G1. People bought the G1 to get Android because they thought Android would be the next big thing. Now you've got the Droid, and you've got a lot of people that have wanted an iPhone-like experience, and especially in the US, where, yeah, that's being limited to AT&T. That's not such an issue over here, where you can buy an iPhone on any carrier you like. Mm. But in the US especially, you know, the Droid is the iPhone for people who want Verizon, and the Nexus One is going to be the same thing for T-Mobile. These are devices that people actually want to buy. Yeah, people who don't know or care what Android is, they will want to buy these devices. And I think that hopefully is going to get those guys over the hump in terms of market share to get more developers coming to Android. And if they're already developing, yeah, like you say, experiences that can be ported, yeah, they're very similar devices to the iPhone. So it would make a lot of sense for developers to, like they do now with 360 and PS3 ports, to just start porting those titles over, get more sales, and yeah, run to the bank with tons of money hats.
They can have money sticking out of their ass.
And we've certainly seen EA jumping on the bandwagon with the Pre as well, or the Pre and the Pixie with WebOS.
Oh, of course. You know, if there is one publisher and developer that will jump on a platform first, it's EA. Mm-hmm. I think they were the first that were all over iPhone. I don't know how they were on Android. I don't know if there's really been a whole lot of gaming momentum on that.
I'm not sure if any of the majors have come to Android yet, but certainly not the big way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but EA definitely jumped all over. They were, you know, pretty much the only big developer on WebOS at the moment. There have been a few iPhone apps that have been ported over to WebOS. some really kind of small stuff and not any of the really well-known titles, but there's been a few things that have been ported over. But I can't think of any other particular big publishers that have really jumped all over any of the platforms at the moment. I know Square Enix has been kind of dipping their feet a little bit in the iPhone, and they're starting to get more into that. But I can't really name any particular big publishers, and even games that seem like they would be from a big publisher, like there was the release of the Call of Duty World at War Zombies thing.
The iPhone.
Yeah, but even that was done by a mobile developer. It was not done by, wasn't ported over by any major studio.
It was very clear, it seemed very clear to me at CES that Palm has gone out of its way to court EA and bring them over to the WebOS platform.
They're doing a good job of kind of trying to really court everyone. I know, you know, they're headed to GDC this year to really talk up developers. And I think overall they're trying to get people to jump to the platform. And I think it's for the better. Personally, WebOS is my platform of choice. I own a Pre and use it as my cell phone. But even aside from that, it's I think they do a lot of good things that, you know, people want. And Apple, being the behemoth that they are, they're just, and the dicks they are, essentially, they're just it's stuff people want, and they're just kind of dragging their feet and refusing to have on there. Android does a lot of great things as well. But it's still, Android seems, it is essentially, it's like the Linux of the handheld world, or the mobile world.
Yeah, it has a longer history than WebOS, perhaps. And it comes from a more traditional background. And I think that was probably adapted later on in the game to become more like the iPhone before it was released. Before Android was released, they saw what Apple was doing and thought, well, if our platform's going to compete, we've got to look and feel more like that. So that's what they've targeted. Whereas Palm's come in with radically new ideas about how to manage data on the phone, how to manage contacts, how to develop applications, even pushing with more HTML5 features, web-based development, but running on the device locally. They've really stepped up the game, and it's really great to see them actively going out after people like EA and trying it, and other game developers as well, and bringing them to the platform. I think that's something that Google could probably learn from.
I think Google has they have a real problem of it almost seems like Android is kind of like their accidental child. They got drunk at a party one night and they just a baby popped out, and they said, well, I want to take care of it, but man, I really didn't want this kid. On one hand, they're really actively developing it. On the other hand, they kind of just say, here it is, do something with it.
I think it's quite telling that clearly, the hardware developers haven't done what Google probably expected early on, and they're having to come to the party themselves and actually release a device, which is something I'm sure they had not planned on doing, to actually push the platform forward, get it more exposure in the mainstream, and really get people onto the platform.
No, and developers, hardware developers, especially like HTC, I know they have their own. They have their own software unit where they basically pump out, the HTC specific experiences, stuff like the Sense UI and things like that
They've done a lot of that with Windows Mobile in the past, even before Android.
Mm-hmm. But I think you are right. A lot of phone manufacturers kind of assumed Google would have done more than they have. It's been a few years now since Android hit with the G1, and it's gotten a lot better, especially with something like the version of Android running atop the Nexus One, where it's they're starting to finally, I think they're comfortable with the base of it, and they're really starting to put that spit polish and kind of user-friendly, pretty UI on top. But they just they haven't really done too much with it. I'm just expecting more than is possible or should be possible, but it just seems like it should be in a more advanced state than it is, especially considering it is an open platform. You would think it would be easy to kind of farm out the work to a certain degree.
No, that's a good point, actually, the whole open platform thing. I mean, there have been some developments in the community, and I mean, one nice thing about Android is that you can, unlike the iPhone, replace parts of the OS that ship with your device with third-party components, and you can do that fully legitimately through the Android market. You don't have to go, you know, getting root on your device and or installing third-party firmwares or anything like that, though you can go down that path if you choose to.
Of course.
But there hasn't been, I mean, there's been a bit of that, but there perhaps hasn't been as much as perhaps Google expected, the community picking up the ball and improving the applications. Or perhaps there's stuff out there and Google's not integrating that into the base platform. I'm really not too sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is. It's like I said, it's just kind of it's Google's problem child. it's an unfortunate state of affairs, but it just seems kind of how they do it, especially considering their other software efforts, like Chrome has been, it seems like it's been amazingly slow to develop. The Mac and Linux versions have just barely started to get out. I think it was a couple months ago where they officially had a beta of them out. Mm-hmm. And knowing Google, who knows, they could be in beta for the next 10 years. But it's the way they do software, it's slow. I wouldn't call it methodical, but it's kind of the video game the old school video game developer mindset, where it's done when it's done, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah, they definitely don't rush things. Google's coming from behind. Apple's got this established lead with the iPhone. And, I mean, people forget how underdeveloped the iPhone was when it first came out. It had a lot of the polish, but it lacked a lot of basic features, including support for third-party applications.
Yeah.
And they've added a lot of that in the meantime. Google, with Android, launched with perhaps a much broader set of features than the iPhone had at its launch. But it certainly hasn't added anywhere near as many features as Apple has managed to add in the meantime.
It's been getting better, but it's just not it's not at the pace that I think we're all expecting it to be. And yeah, updates are a whole nother issue. They can come even slower than the official updates actually get pumped out. There can be months delay between a release of something and when it actually hits for your phone. And in some cases, on Android, it may not, you know, someone might even have to hack that in. It might not even be officially supported.
Yeah. One thing to be said for Apple is that they've definitely supported their old hardware. I mean, you can grab, iPhone OS 3.1 and install that on anything back to, an original 2G iPhone from 2007.
Which, I think it's amazing, actually. That's a good point. It's amazing that Apple has brought this kind of PC upgrade mentality to phones, where, you know, you're running a standard operating environment, but the hardware is incrementally getting better. And, so the user experience stays generally the same, and the interoperability between applications and features is generally the same, but they're not standing still. New hardware is coming. Features are getting better, and that can only it means that even better features will come down the line as hardware gets more powerful.
Yep. And they're continuing to bring as many of those, the improvements that they're making, the software improvements, to their older devices as well. So I fear that one of the problems Android is going to face is fragmentation. You've got different devices with different capabilities. Sure, that's sort of one issue, and that's probably not a bad issue necessarily. I mean, it's great that you've got devices like the Droid and the Nexus One with higher resolution screens and faster CPUs and things like that. But the real issue is that you've got devices that are on Android 1.5 and can't be upgraded any further already. Whereas you've got the Nexus One's on 2.1, Droid's on 2.0 with 2.1 coming sometime in the future. But you can still walk into a shop right now and buy an Android 1.6 device, even though it could be sitting next to an Android 2.1 or 2.0 device in the same store.
Exactly. I think that's a big fear for a lot of people and a lot of developers. I think that might be one of the reasons they've kind of, especially as far as games go, they've kind of stayed away. Games, if you have a platform with tons of different specs, it's much like the PC environment where you have to shoot for a certain low level. Sometimes people will be excluded, unfortunately. That's one of the downsides to bringing that kind of PC upgrade mentality to phones, is that as things advance, certain bits will be left out. And, it's unfortunate that they don't, at least with Android, they don't seem to support software as well as something as somebody like Apple does with the iPhone. But I suppose it's just that it's that Google mentality of, kind of plodding forward as slow as they can. And, sometimes things just get left in the dust.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if the Nexus One will change that, because really, the Android model so far has echoed what happens with other cell phones. I mean, look at Symbian OS phones from Nokia, for instance. They all run different versions of what is essentially the same operating system, and old devices don't necessarily get upgraded with new features as time goes on, because the hardware manufacturers aren't interested in doing that. And if the hardware manufacturers with Android devices aren't interested in bringing those new features, then it's not going to happen. So it makes me wonder whether we'll see that trend continue, or whether the Nexus One at least will get supported from here on in with new OS upgrades on a fairly regular basis.
Well, the Nexus One is the official Google phone, essentially. So I would hope they will keep it updated. It also makes you wonder what's going to happen to the other Android handsets now that Google is really, they're not dipping their toes in, they're shoving their whole body in there and really like they're really getting into it now. Yeah. They're really having it, they're sticking their hands all over the place and feeling up the hardware and all the different bits, and they're trying to be a bigger player and kind of shape the Android experience more so than they have in the past, where they have just kind of, thrown it out there and said, do something with it. It'll be interesting how hardware manufacturers respond to that. I've heard some people say, that it's really gonna, it's gonna cause a lot of people to abandon the platform. I don't think that's true at all. It'll make hardware developers think twice to a point, especially considering, just the obvious example of Motorola releasing the Droid, and 4 months down the line comes the Nexus One, or not even that long, the Nexus One comes out, and it's for all intents and purposes, it's a much better phone, spec wise. It has a newer version of Android on there. Even 2.0 just came out, and 2.1 is out now. So
yep.
It makes you wonder if they're really trying to get that more sculpted experience together and still let everyone else use the platform, but have a much bigger focus than they have in the past.
Yeah, I certainly don't see the hardware manufacturers abandoning Android either. I think they realize that they need Android. They need a smartphone operating system with the same kind of capabilities as the iPhone to compete with Apple. Mm-hmm. And Android is an essentially free way of them for them to do that. They can take the software, install it on their hardware, and run with it. Yeah, none of them have the resources to develop their own operating system. The only ones that are even trying at this point are Nokia, who are trying desperately to overhaul Symbian OS to modernize that, while also exploring their own Linux-based platform called MAMO on the N900. But, yeah, I don't know what's going to come of all that. I think it's, for everyone else, it's really Android as a lifeline almost. They need to get on that to continue competing with Apple in that sort of premium smartphone space.
Essentially, yeah. You know, I'm sure we could talk a bunch more about Android, but there's some other bases we should get covered.
Yep.
You know, one thing I think we should go over a little bit before we get to the beast of the news that was the iPad is, you know, before the iPad was announced, Amazon announced that they will be bringing third-party apps to the Kindle, which is kind of crazy.
It's an interesting move, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's, you know, the Kindle is... It's not like any other platform. It is a very specific device. It is an e-reader, and that's it.
Yeah, it's very much a fixed-function device, essentially.
Obviously, it's built off a Linux base. There are a couple ancillary features. You know, it does Wikipedia. It does a couple other things. There's a few hacks people have had to get things like Google Maps in there, things like that. But it's limited by the screen. I think that's the biggest limiting factor. You're not going to get fast-paced games on there at all. I don't think you could get anything more fast-paced than something like Word Ace, maybe. but I mean, you couldn't even get Peggle on something like that.
Yeah, I guess there is still scope there for those casual style sort of turn-based games, but yeah, it's going to be an interesting system for developers to work on, that's for sure.
I think it's not to say that it's not a good idea. I think it's actually a really brilliant idea for the type of people who you know, who are hardcore enough readers. I think, you know, those are the type of people, you know, I could be wrong here, but I think those are the type of people who, you know, love to do crosswords and they love word games and they love, you know, a lot of things along that vein. And I think those could really take off on the Kindle.
Yeah, those are definitely the sorts of games that you can imagine people playing on that sort of device. I guess the other problem for the Kindle in general in terms of expanding its functionality is the networking. I mean, Amazon shipping it with built-in free or essentially free 3G networking was a pretty bold move. And
very ballsy move.
Yeah, very ballsy move. I mean, it's great for books because you download books wherever you are, and I'm sure whatever data charges are involved in that are just included in with the cost of the books as they price them. But yeah, if you're talking about applications that could be using network traffic, it's going to be interesting to see how much traffic Amazon is going to be willing to shoulder the bill for, especially in countries like Australia where network traffic costs a hell of a lot of money.
Actually, they did make some announcements on how bandwidth will be handled. It's very restricted, essentially. 100 KB free monthly allowance, which is, you know, you can't do jack shit with 100 KB a month.
Yeah, you can't open your inbox.
Yeah, exactly. It's a ridiculously low amount. It might be good for something like maybe like keeping track of scores or something, like
posting scores to Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. Something like that. But other than that, let's see. It's going to be a net of delivery fees of 15 cents per megabyte past the 100 KB. So, you know.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's at least they have that provision there for billing that, but I can't see a lot of people, being willing to pay that kind of rates for data if you get more sort of fully fleshed applications on there.
Perhaps this will lead to more of a subscription-based kind of gaming experience for the Kindle.
Yep. Maybe it'll be games with DLC, you know, charged, you know, paid for DLC, things like that.
Mm-hmm. It could be interesting. You know, like I said, basic games could work really well on the Kindle, and I think the audience that owns a Kindle will really take to it. One of the other big major points, though, is there's a real lack of control on the Kindle. It has no touchscreen. It has, you know, the turn page buttons on the side, and it has a keyboard. But again, that's you're not going to be doing anything fast-paced on that. And
yep.
Even slower-paced games might be kind of limited from the real kind of lack of options there.
It's going to be an interesting one to see. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out for sure.
Yeah.
Well, should we get to the five-tone elephant in the room then?
Yeah, all right, let's talk about that motherfucking iPad.
You're probably one of the few people that's excited about this thing. I remember you saying not long ago that, yeah, you play a lot of your mobile games at home and something bigger to play them on would be kind of cool.
I think I got like a 70-30 split on this. 70% of me is really excited for it, and 30% of me just kind of wants to go to Apple's design team and say, listen, like, what the fuck are you guys doing? The iPad, it's, you know, there isn't a lot to say about it.
It's a big iPhone.
It's not even a big iPhone. It's a big iPod.
Yeah, it's a big iPod Touch, exactly.
And, you know, there's really not much to say, at least on the software side. The software, you know, it runs the iPhone OS. It's a modified version of the iPhone OS, but it is the iPhone OS. It does some things differently. There's a few more interesting things Apple has added into the SDK that developers can take advantage of. It has a better screen resolution, but even then, I don't know whose wisdom this was to shove in a 4x3 screen into that thing.
I know. Why not keep it the same as the iPod Touch itself or the iPhone?
At the very least, do that. But, you know, Apple has even with the iPhone, I was baffled by their inability to shove like a proper 16x9 screen in there. It's just, I don't know if they, you know, went to manufacturers and said, hey, what's the best deal I can get on a screen? And went off of those prices. Because, you know, it's 2010. It's 2010. You know, if you don't have a widescreen by now in your new, brand new device that you're charging $600 for, I don't know what the fuck you're thinking.
Yeah, watching videos on this thing is not going to be that much bigger than watching them on a 4.5-inch Android device.
Well, and they have the screenshots of, you know, they have like a screenshot of, you know, watching Star Trek on it, the new Star Trek on it. And it's, you know, not only does it have the giant bezel around the screen, but the screen isn't widescreen, so you have these giant black borders to the point where the, you know, the picture is like barely a quarter of the device. It's absolutely fucking ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's comically bad.
Yeah. You know, as you said, though, I am one of the few people, you know, I don't... Mobile gaming it's nice because I can do it on my couch, I can do it on my bed, and I can do it everywhere. I can do it on the toilet. Yeah.
I hope people got the first part of that sentence and didn't just tune in for the last half of it.
No, you see, I was trying to turn it into something really sexual here, but I guess it didn't really go through. But yeah, you know, mobile gaming is, you know, it's fun for what it is, but I'm not hanging out and, you know, sitting on the bus, and I don't take a train for 2 hours every day to work. You know, if I'm going somewhere, I am going somewhere. I don't game on the go, essentially. And so a big device to me it's a great thing. You know, I'm really looking forward to the DSi XL for that very reason. So a big iPod is a good thing. there, you know, I can think of a handful of games on the iPod, iPhone, that would really benefit from a bigger screen, because it's just, it's almost impossible to play them with how small the screen space you have. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I think they did a really good job thinking about the price points, to a point. For an Apple device, they did an amazing job on it. $500 for the base price is very smart.
Yep.
You know, obviously, the higher up you get, it gets more ridiculous. If you throw in 3G, it gets more ridiculous. I think the highest it goes is it's like 870 or something like that.
Yeah, that's getting into MacBook territory almost.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's comically high. But for a $500 base entry price, I think that's really smart. Still though, it's way above the purchase price for a lot of people. That's higher than, you know, that's higher than console prices.
Yeah, and certainly a lot more than an iPod Touch, which can play pretty much all of the same, well, at this point at least, all of the same games just on a smaller screen.
Exactly. You know, Jobs did mention they were really trying to, you know, they were asking, you know, can there be a third device between your smartphone and your laptop or your PC. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there is room for a third device, and I'm throwing up air quotes. I know you guys can't see it, but I'm throwing up some air quotes here. There is room for a third device. Whether or not you will accept that, there is room for it. But, you know, the price is a big, big problem. Even at $500, which I think is, you know, a smart move, that's still way too much money. Mm-hmm. And especially for essentially what you don't get with the iPad, you know, it's a very constricted platform.
It's certainly not a computer. And this is where I think, I mean, I have problems with it from a software freedom point of view, and I won't bother going into them here because that's kind of irrelevant for a gaming discussion. But for me, it's too big to be that sort of portable device that you're going to carry around everywhere with you. And it's far too limited to in any way replace my laptop, where I do need to take a computer with me anyway. So it's kind of stuck in this no man's land where it's not of any use to me at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and for all intents and purposes, you know, right now I own a MacBook, for no other reason than at the time, like, I needed a PC that I could pick up and take up anywhere with me. Mm-hmm. Before that, I had a Windows PC, but, you know, I got a MacBook for whatever reason I got one for.
They're nice machines.
For the price, it was, you know, a really solid machine. Anyway, you know, I think there is room, you know, for the tons of people that do have, you know, that have a desktop and, you know, they really don't have a device they can just pick up and take anywhere with them, you know, something they could kind of just, you know, throw around the house.
I could see a lot of people just, and I think people have been using netbooks for a similar kind of thing. You know, the device that sits next to the couch and you can just pick it up and, yeah, if you want to look up some actor on IMDb that's on your TV at the time, just, you know, tap away, there's your information, off you go, put it back down on the table and get back to watching TV.
Yeah, and, you know, you could, you know, there's tons of usable situations, you know, just using it as a device you could stream bullshit off of your PC, your Mac, or whatever, pump out music on your speakers, or I'd love to say stream video, but for whatever reason, Apple decided to restrict it to 480p output. Which is just, it's another one of those decisions that just, you know, makes you roll your eyes and slap your forehead and say, what the fuck were you thinking?
Wasted potential. The hardware is there, but the software's just got these arbitrary restrictions in it that just drive you batty.
Yeah, there's just, there. That's, you know, I mentioned this on a friend's Facebook update when he was talking about it. It's just, the iPad is an unfortunate series of compromises. Mm. You know, they had to get that price down. They had to get that that $500 barrier. You know, I think they could have thrown in a lot more than they did for $500, but not Apple. Apple couldn't have thrown in more than they did for $500, and that's a real problem here.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't even have a built-in USB port, for Christ's sake.
Yep. But I don't know if that's a cost thing or if that's a design thing. I think Apple would, just like with the iPhone, Apple really likes having that sort of proprietary connector that they can then charge people add-ons for, or at the very least license out access to for third parties to charge you for add-ons for. I think that's a bit of revenue making there, rather than being a limitation that they've used to get. I think that's perhaps something they have done specifically to get it in under $500. They can lose a little more on the hardware or make a little less profit if they can make that money back in accessories later.
Well, and, you know, the way I think about the iPad is, since it's running the iPhone OS, since it's running this such restricted OS, you know, I think Apple is really trying to have a stranglehold on what media is, essentially. They're trying to lock down books now. You know, they have the music market locked down. They're going after movies and books and applications. Are really, I think they're just trying to shoehorn really limited usability into this device on purpose. You know, I know they could get away with OS X on it. You know, my ex-girlfriend's, you know, shitty old G4 could run OS X. There's absolutely no reason this could not run OS X, but I think they're trying to really lock everyone in.
Yeah, that's a big part of the problem I have with these devices, and the iPhone and the iPod Touch as well. It's, yeah, Apple often use the excuse for the iPhone that these restrictions had to be in place because AT&T said this or that or whatever, or they were entering a new marketplace and they had to play nice with the carriers that were there. But for the iPad, it's really a clean slate.
Hey-o!
Yeah, they could do whatever they wanted, and it's clear now that they wanted to do that kind of lockdown operating system. They want to control the software, and they perhaps want to control the destiny of computing, or at least the type of computing that a lot of the public will do. You know, I can see a lot of people, maybe not abandoning computers as such, but a lot of people that maybe don't use computers now or use them very infrequently, picking up this and or devices like it and using those more often because they're more user-friendly, they fit in better with their lifestyle. And they're not necessarily going to understand the restrictions that Apple is putting in place for them.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I hate to see such restrictions put into place. You know, even back when the iPhone was released, I kind of called bullshit when they said, you know, we have to restrict the platform. And, you know, over the years, it's become more and more apparent that that's just not the case. Android is completely open. Palm has been really excellent with WebOS. They allow third-party applications and even patches to the main OS itself on there without hesitation. It's unnecessary, and it's just an obvious grab to kind of corner everyone into their market. And it's, you know, they're great devices, but it's, you know, you're giving up your freedom to choose. Yep. Here. Apple is not going to be so friendly. They're not going to allow third-party markets on the iPad. They're just, it's not going to happen. And it's unfortunate.
It's going to be very interesting to see what happens if and when Amazon submits a Kindle app for the iPad. I know there's one for the iPhone at the moment, but are they going to, I mean, no one's going to want to run the iPhone one because all the iPhone applications the iPhone OS doesn't have resolution independence. These apps are just literally scaled up pixel by pixel from all reports so far. Mm. No one's going to want to read, yeah, books, Kindle books on their iPad with the resolution of an iPhone. They're going to want to use the whole screen and read books. But with Apple in that market now, I could very well, very easily see them, yeah, not allowing Amazon to release a Kindle application in the same way that they've rejected Amazon MP3 applications in the past.
Well, they have that that utterly retarded, you know, duplicate functionality clause. It really restricts what people are allowed to do. And even if they didn't have that, you know, Apple has proven time and time and again that they will gladly reject an application for any reason they see fit.
Yep.
It could be literally any reason. It could be because your application has the ability to access content with curse words. as something as completely asinine as that.
I know. It's bizarre.
Yeah. I think that the restrictions have definitely been loosening.
Well, I know with the iPad, there have been, or with the release of the iPhone 3.2 OS, which is on the iPad, they have loosened some of the restrictions on 3G for VoIP use, for instance.
That's an actually interesting move, considering, you know, AT&T is their only carrier. Even for iPad use, AT&T is their only carrier. So you have to wonder if that was a push by Apple, if they've really been, you know, kind of pushing that for that all along, or if, you know, AT&T finally, you know, they're finally improving their network to the point where they're comfortable enough. But, you know, by all accounts, AT&T is god awful anyway.
Yep.
So who knows about that? But that definitely is an interesting move, and it's definitely welcome. It's long overdue.
Well, we could talk about Apple all day, but that's probably where we should call it, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Should we ask Guja what he thinks?
Yeah, we should ask Guja whose ass he put his ass into.
You're one of the iPod lesbian threesomes at work.
Yes, all right.
Damn straight. That'll do it, I think.
Mission accomplished.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for joining us for another Partners in Lag podcast. If you want to follow us on Twitter, I'm Newman with a P42.
And I'm sneaking around on Twitter. Make sure to subscribe to our RSS feed whenever we have one of those available.
Well, there is one on the Linux Gamers site. I'll link that up. Right. Yeah, and so for now, you'll find these posts at my blog, which is blag.linuxgamers.net, and I'll link up the RSS feed there as well.
And make sure and check back whenever we feel like it when we have a new podcast up. You know, I'd like to get this going weekly because I'm very opinionated, but
that's just all the editing, but right, we'll see how we go.
Right. Hopefully we can get the editing down to
minimal,
less than a week. less than a week. we'll try and get that down as soon as possible, but hopefully we'll have another show within the next couple weeks. Make sure and tune into the blog, hit that RSS feed up, and listen to us talk about bullshit.